This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Agencies aren't made for courage. Like, they're just not designed for people who, if you make a bold decision.
Florida's legislative leaders in tech are making bold statements, turning their innovative ideas into policy, even in the face of death.
Any startup I've been a part of, it's run as fast as you can because somebody's going to try and kill you. The moment you walk into the doors of the Capitol, the rule is very different. It is innovate, and they will all come to try to kill you.
On this episode, we've got our legislative tech roundtable featuring Senator Jeff Brandis, along with Representatives James Grant, Jason Fisher, and Jennifer Webb.
Give a mandate to the Agency for State Technology or whatever the new iteration is to change this. We need to bring people in with that tech background and that tech culture.
To solve real life problems today, making sure that people can move around urban environments easily through microtransit, and demonstrating how tech can improve our lives.
Also, in honor of Children's Week at the Capitol, we wonder, is the state doing enough for the kids?
I would say no, and most pundits who observe the political process in Florida would agree with us.
That's Roy Miller with the Children's Campaign. Plus, it has taken too long, but I'm finally catching up with freelance journalist Kenya Woodard.
I've been waiting patiently for over a year now.
All that and so much more coming up on episode 164 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. I had a chance recently to sit down with some tech-savvy lawmakers to discuss some of the more disruptive issues facing Florida. These are excerpts from my article in the spring 2019 edition of Influence Magazine via floridapolitics.com. So in the article I write, the future of technology in Florida is paved with an overabundance of exciting opportunities, according to a handful of legislators helping to break down barriers and push boundaries, all while being bold enough to take risks with their innovative policies. I was asked to moderate a panel of legislative leaders making an impact in Florida's tech sector for a deep dive in what's trending and what's helping the industry to flourish in the Sunshine State amidst all the challenges.
And one of the things I kind of recognized early on in my legislative life was that in the private sector, the rule is innovate or dies.
That's Representative James Grant, a Republican from Tampa and co-founder of a health IT company. Grant explains how the public sector isn't necessarily welcoming to entrepreneurs like him.
From any startup I've been a part of, it's run as fast as you can because somebody's going to try and kill you. The moment you walk into the doors of the Capitol, the rule is very different. It is innovate, and they will all come to try to kill you.
Grant says his point extends to dealing with bureaucracies in general, which he thinks often promote the incentive for people to
don't screw up. And the safest way to not screw up is don't take risks.
There is widespread agreement as Grant sits alongside Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican from Tampa and an early backer of ride-sharing technology, Representative Jason Fisher, a Jacksonville Republican who filed the first autonomous vehicle legislation of 2019, and Democratic Representative Jennifer Webb of St. Petersburg, who is embracing technology to find solutions in transportation infrastructure, affordable housing, and community health. So in the article, we dive into what they called the prototype culture. Brandis, who sits on the Senate's Innovation, Industry, and Technology Committee, lamented a need for more innovative thinkers in state government.
These agencies aren't made for courage.
Brandis is known for helping to advance Florida's landscape, making it friendlier for ride-sharing platforms. He's now hoping to make similar breakthroughs for other tech companies like Bird and Lime by calling for an update to Florida's laws to allow for micromobility. That's an idea to use small electric vehicles like scooters and bicycles to take larger cars off the roads while giving people a convenient option to get around within the 0 to 5 mile range.
The big challenge is, how do we get communities to recognize that they can take risks? How do we create a prototype culture amongst our cities, amongst our transportation leaders?
In calling for community leaders to allow for more experimentation, Brandis points to the Villages, the 55 and over adult community in Central Florida that's testing door-to-door self-driving taxi service provided by the company Voyage, and Ford doing the same in Miami. To propel this culture change, Fisher, who is championing legislation for fully autonomous vehicles, ones without an actual person in the seat, believes the state should hire differently.
So I'm a big believer that in order for organizations to change, you have to change the culture. And sometimes that means hiring different people. And that's not to say that I don't think that we have some fine, capable people that are currently serving in different government roles.
Representative Webb, who disrupted the status quo with her blue wave victory in the Florida House, is excited to be in the policy driver's seat of disruptive innovation. She would like to see more two-way communication between the private and public sectors to solve problems on both sides.
And to that point, and also to talk to our businesses that are currently here, especially in the tech sector, and find out what challenges that they're facing.
She added a lot of problems in Florida's tech industry are workforce and infrastructure.
And so making sure that we're working in those spaces to provide an ecosystem in which the tech industry, autonomous vehicle industry, next generation transportation, micro transportation, transit options can all thrive.
And there you have it. That is our tech roundtable, courtesy of FloridaPolitics.com. It's an article I wrote in the spring 2019 issue of Influence Magazine, out right now. So flip on over to Influence Magazine to see the rest of this discussion. Just do it. That's where the conversation picks up, with our tech panelists diving into solutions to the many challenges facing Florida. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. This program is listener-supported, so visit rotundapodcast.com to contribute to this program with your story ideas or generous contribution. Visit us on social media at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. If you have a story to tell, or if your company has a story to share, visit rotundapodcast.com. Tell us about it so we can then tell the world. All right, time to check in with one of the reporters keeping track of all the madness in Florida's capital, Kenya Woodard. She's a freelance journalist with the Tampa Bay Times, and she joins me here to talk about some of the things that she's been tracking as of late. So, Kenya Woodard, welcome to The Rotunda. Glad to finally have you on. How are things?
I know. I'm great. I've been waiting patiently for over a year now.
Well, it was good to see you during the Black Caucus event recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Always good to see you. You know, always good to be in Tallahassee. It's probably one of the best kept secrets in the state in terms of, you know, just a lot going on there, especially if you're a, you know, a government and politics junkie like me. It's always good to visit the Capitol and, you know, see democracy in action, if you will. So good times.
What are you up to now? For those who don't know, like, you know, you're a freelance journalist. So what are some of your most recent projects, and where are you located right now?
So I'm in Tampa. I've been here almost 10 years. Still mostly freelance writing for other publications. That's primarily what I'm doing right now. I am excited, though, about this other venture that I'm working on. It actually will be aligned much more closely with what I like to write about and talk about, and that's politics and, you know, all of the things associated with that. So I'll have that ready hopefully in the next couple of months. It'll be ready to debut, and I will definitely keep you abreast of that.
Looking forward to it. So let's jump right into the politics. And I hate to start off on such a downbeat, but as you know, it's Children's Week and it's celebrating of children, but it doesn't seem to be a good time for the state's youth. I don't know, punching them all into the, or putting them all into this big category, but when you're looking at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting and the aftermath and what we're still dealing with, it's not a good state of affairs for our youth, or at least the policy making sure we're looking towards the youth. What are your thoughts on that front?
A couple of things. I was mentioning to someone how we don't do a good job in this country of dealing with the fallout from these traumatic events, right? We you know, there's plenty of attention and media coverage on the actual shootings themselves. But when we're talking about folks' well-being and their mental state and health after, there's not a lot of attention and resources given to those things. So I'm extremely saddened to see the deaths of those students. And also the doctor in Sandy Hook, whose daughter died in that shooting. Very, very tragic events. And you just don't know what people are wrestling with, trying to do their best to move forward. You know, for some of them, it's just impossible, or it just becomes very, very difficult. You know, I'm extremely sad to see that.
Seeing those students when they came in just a short amount of time, put on that massive event here at the Capitol, garnered national attention, trying to curb the use of guns and the excessive access to guns in the state. And here we are just a short time away, and there's another effort that seems to be the focus is arming teachers, something that they're advocating against, and arming paramedics. These policies that are going forward at the moment are not really what those children have been calling for.
Exactly. Now, you and I, you know, we were there last year, you know, during those demonstrations, and we saw the action, you know, the response, rather, from lawmakers to, you know, the shooting itself, and then also to the students, you know, coming up to the Capitol to protest.
This isn't what I really thought it would be, because people really just are out for themselves.
This is your first time here at the Capitol?
Yes.
What do you make of the process so far of seeing lawmakers?
It's inefficient. It's inefficient. It's not fast enough. These people have to work together. I know change is slow, always has been, always will be, but this can't be. This is our future, and these are children's lives. It sickens me that there are so many people that would not vote on the bill that happened yesterday just to even discuss a ban. That's absolutely atrocious, and I'm happy that they're not going to be here in a few years' time.
That's David Hogg, the very serious and...
There was language and money put aside in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas legislation that would allow for the hire of more social workers and mental health therapists in schools. So, of course, you know, a year from now and with the deaths of these two students, of course, the question now is how effective was that really? You know, are students getting the kind of services that they need to cope, you know, with such a, you know, horrific event? We tend to have this mindset that, you know, once the media glare has faded away from something, that it's, you know, over and done. And that's not the case for a lot of people that are involved or, you know, some kind of way connected to that Parkland shooting. They're still dealing with those, with that event. And I'm just curious to know how schools are helping students, helping those Parkland students to cope.
Yeah.
That's Kenya Woodard, freelance journalist. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. So it was recently Children's Week at the Capitol, the usual sight of hands, papier-mâché, colorful cutouts of children's hands hanging all around the rotunda. It's quite a display to put children at the forefront. But are they at the forefront when it comes to policy issues? I bumped into one child advocate while roaming the halls of the Capitol. This is Roy Miller with the Children's Campaign.
Roy Miller, welcome to the Rotunda. It's Children's Week, and the focus is on the state's children. Are we paying attention enough to are the youth of the state of Florida?
I would say no. And most pundits who observe the political and process in Florida would agree with us, because when they've listed the top issues being dealt with by this year's legislature and looking at the issues of the governor's office, children have not been at the top of that list. In fact, they haven't even been in the top 10.
Why is that?
Well, I think the obvious answer is something that people always say, but they don't always understand the importance of it. Kids don't vote, and they depend on all the citizens in Florida to make sure their needs are met. And when you don't have a direct say and you're dependent on somebody else speaking up for you, you don't always get attended to at the level that's necessary. Hmm. Doesn't mean that people don't care, and it doesn't mean that they're callous, because they're not callous. But when push comes to shove, kids need all the citizens of Florida to speak up loudly on their behalf.
And that's what your organization is all about. What's the focus of the children's campaign?
Our focus is really the 16 hours of a day that a child's not in school. When a person comes up to Tallahassee and listens to the debate, there is a real robust debate in both chambers and at all levels in the governor's office about education. Because people feel that with educational success, lifetime success follows. We believe that the quality of life and the social problems that kids face in the 16 hours a day that they're not in school have more of a bearing on their success in school than sometimes policymakers really attend to. Children and child welfare system, how are they doing in school? Kids in the juvenile justice system, how well are they going to do in school? Children that are born low birth weight or with delays and fall behind immediately, how well are they going to do in pre-K, kindergarten, and be ready for school?
So what are some of the policy issues that are working in your favor that puts kids first?
Well, if you look at the total report on Florida from independent groups, Florida Kids Count says that Florida is actually, as a state, regressed in terms of its overall health and well-being of its children compared to other states. We're on a downhill slide in the National Kids Count ranking from somewhere in the 30s, which isn't uncommon for a fast-growing state, but now we're down in the low 40s. And in the latest reports out of, like the Alice report, we have more children living near poverty and families only one paycheck away from being in a crisis large enough not to even meet basic needs. We have a larger percentage than any time in the history of Florida. Mm-hmm. So we look ahead at the future and we're sounding the alarm. We need to pay a lot of attention to kids, a lot more attention than we are, because the numbers aren't working in our favor.
Well, Roy Miller, I wish you all the best. Thank you for taking this time to speak with me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That's Roy Miller with the Children's Campaign. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics each week. This program is supported by listeners like you. Please send your generous contribution to rotundapodcast.com. Follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast. Exactly 1 year from this week, the official count of every resident of the United States begins with the 2020 census, but Florida has long had problems getting an accurate count of its children. Nearly a million children were missed in the last census, according to data from Kids Count. It's a major concern because the census count determines the federal dollars allocated to communities, as well as how they are represented in Congress. Donovan Lee Sin with the Children's Trust says at least 200,000 children could go uncounted, simply because their families are hard to reach.
So areas where you have high influence of minority households, immigrant households, multifamily housing, and so it's a particular challenge for our state.
Florida has the fourth highest number of young children living in areas considered hard to count. Lee Sin says it's important to meet that challenge to ensure everyone is counted. Florida gained two additional representatives after the 2010 census and received more than $44 billion in federal dollars to support government programs. Lee Sin says the highest rate of undercount rests with the youngest Floridians from birth to age 4. To avoid it requires significant outreach to families and letting them know why it's important to fill out the forms accurately.
Having an undercount and not taking stock of such a significant percentage of our population means that federal budgeting or appropriations for things that support public education or highway or housing housing or road construction, it may mean that we get a lesser amount than we should get.
Lee Sin is encouraging everyone to be on the lookout for the census forms and to start having conversations with friends and family about participating. He adds there will be multiple opportunities to fill out forms, including online, by standard mail, via phone, and in some cases, with in-person visit by a census representative. My conversation with Kenya Woodard continues.
But like, I always think about this. Like, what aren't we reporting on in the state of Florida? What's missing in your opinion?
It's a really good question, and I'm glad you asked, because I came across an article in the Miami Herald that published probably a couple of days ago. It was just some quotes, if you will, from leaders all over the state asking, you know, what are the most important, you know, issues facing Florida right now? And some of the responses were expected, transportation, infrastructure, tourism, business, you know, development, which are all fine and good. But when you take that same question and ask the everyday average Floridian, they're going to tell you jobs, healthcare, affordable housing, you know, all of those things, you know, community relations, you know, between the police and community, all of those things are going to kind of jump out from the average Floridian. And my thinking is that we're just not really, it's okay to ask leaders what they think. I think we're not doing as good of a job as we could capturing the ideas from the average Floridian about what matters to them right now. And there needs to be certainly, you know, a focus on, you know, bigger issues. But when we're talking about, you know, day to day, I don't think we're doing a good job of really capturing what that means for a lot of folks here in Florida. Yeah.
We talked about so much stuff. We'll just have to have her back on the program. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Senator Jeff Brandis, also Representatives Jason Fisher, Jennifer Webb, and James Grant for being on the program. Also, Roy Miller with the Children's Campaign. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.